Well, I think my initial reaction was probably the same as a lot of people, which is this was very ghoulish and very disrespectful to the family. And I think that was particularly true because Mr. Phillip had been killed by police in this police department. And now here they were at the funeral home, sort of grabbing the hand of the family's loved one who now has passed away. So I think I had a human reaction first, and then I had my lawyer reaction. And the lawyer reaction was very much about what are the rights of privacy in a personal cell phone.
So what are they?
Well, the Supreme Court recently said in a very important case called Riley, California versus Riley, that cell phones are different from other kinds of property that you have. And the court said, you know, there's so much of our private information on cell phones, from our pictures to our communications to our browsing histories, that you need to have a warrant to search cell phones, even if it's a phone that's on you when you're arrested, which normally you wouldn't need a warrant to search a package on your person. And so here they were trying to get into his cell phone, and I imagine they were trying to get into it to try to have information to justify whatever they had been looking for him for when they killed him. And, you know, then I thought, well, okay, this man is deceased, so the right to privacy in the cell phone, courts generally agree, doesn't survive after the person passes away. But nevertheless, I mean, it's still a piece of property, which presumably now belongs to his family. And there are still messages and pictures and all kinds of information on the phone that was not just Mr. Phillips, but also belongs to his family.
What are the legal rights then of the family members in this case to the information that's on the phone?
Well, I think that's the very interesting legal question that a court might answer now. If the phone is now the family's property because the gentleman is deceased and so Mr. Phillips' family has inherited the phone, you know, they have a constitutionally protected privacy interest in the property. And then I think there's a complicated question of whether they have a right to privacy in their messages and pictures and stuff that are stored on their loved one's phone, even after he passes away.
Now, the specific problem about how to access a phone, because phones can be locked in a manner of ways, whether there was a password or a thumbprint, do you happen to know why is it that if they expected that the fingerprint would unlock the phone, why it didn't work when the man's body was used?
Yeah, my understanding is that the technology that detects your thumbprint, it's heat sensitive, so it requires the heat of the body to make it work and then read the fingerprint. And I've heard that that's true, and so it requires warmth, and I imagine that the police officers did not know that. But it's interesting because, you know, the question is, if you don't have a means of unlocking the phone, how do you get to that information? And in other cases, we've seen police officers and courts struggle with access to information that is stored on a phone that is protected either with a thumbprint or with a passcode.
Including trying to get the companies that make the phones or that make the software to provide a backdoor to law enforcement. Why don't you give us a little bit of background about that history?
Right. So increasingly, particularly with iPhones, Apple, which manufactures them, has been increasing the security on the phones such that the data is encrypted or mathematically scrambled in a way that is difficult, if not impossible, to unscramble and then to read. And Apple's done a number of things to try to help consumers protect the data on their phones. You know, these phones get stolen or lost. And so Apple's tried, you know, there are governments around the world that want access to these phones that are owned by human rights workers or journalists. So Apple's tried very hard to make these phones something that customers can count on. And a few years ago, there was a dispute over this because Apple's newest phones are very secure. And the FBI wanted Apple to write new software to help circumvent some of the security measures on its phone. They were weren't able to guess the passcode and they wanted something that would let them guess the passcode any number of times so that they could brute force or, you know, guess and get into the phone. And this phone was owned by one of the San Bernardino shooters. So the government sued Apple to try to force Apple to write this new software that would help it decrypt the phone. And Apple opposed it, as did basically all of the major internet companies. And then ultimately, so the question was, could the government force a provider to help it decrypt phones or computers or laptops or tablets by writing new software that would backdoor the security measures? And ultimately what happened is that that case got dismissed. There was not a final decision in it because the government found another way to get into a phone. There was a company that was selling a solution to help the government get into that phone. And so the government paid, I think it was $1 million or something. They don't, it was not clear, paid to get into the phone, and there was nothing there.
This backdoor solution, though, I imagine that you think that that's a bad idea from a privacy standpoint. Why would that be bad?
It's a bad idea from a privacy standpoint because if you have backdoors, it basically, this is a technique that not only can be used by the FBI with a legitimate reason, but can be used by criminals and can be used by oppressive governments without a legitimate reason. It's really not just a privacy problem, but it's a security problem. It means that you won't be able to trust that your data is safe.
And you often hear the argument, well, if you've got nothing to hide, then you shouldn't worry about this happening. But should you?
Absolutely, because everybody has something that they want to hide from somebody, whether it's your credit card number from a thief or your like snide comments from your boss, or, you know, something that is a crime, but some low-level crime that people don't know, I think, all the things that are arguably criminal in this world. Everybody has something that they want to hide from somebody. And also, you know, I often say to people who say this, well, you know, it's not really about you. We depend in our society for freedom on all kinds of people who are journalists, who are activists, who are human rights workers, who are in the government. And the way that our society works requires that these people be secure so that they can't be imprisoned, so that they can't be blackmailed, they can't be extorted, they can't be, you know, sort of turned somehow from what they're supposed to be doing, reporting, advocating, governing. And so we need to ensure that we have security so that our society works.
And getting back to the case of the police trying to gain access to the phone of a man that they shot, In reading the legal analysis, it often came up that the person who had died has no expectation of privacy, but there has to be some sort of expectation of privacy. When someone dies, there's not an unlimited number of things that the police can do to your body, for example. There is some sort of legal expectation of some sort of dignity or privacy with your body after you die.
I agree with that. I agree with that. You know, the idea that you die and suddenly there's nothing about you that the government needs to respect is so alien of an argument.
And we're speaking maybe from a logical standpoint, but what about in the law? What does the law say about it?
Well, you know, there aren't a lot of these cases that have come up so far. And so, to my knowledge, we don't have a robust legal precedent about this. But, you know, my expertise is particularly in the area of technology and other people who are experts in, you know, things like how you have to treat a body would know about that better. I imagine that there are laws, especially at the state level, about how everybody from police to undertakers to funeral homes needs to treat a body in order to be respectful to the body, to the dead person's memory, and to the family.
Our guest is the ACLU's Surveillance and Cybersecurity Counsel, Jennifer Granick. And Jennifer, let's go out on a limb here. And what are some of the worst case scenarios that you can think of people's privacy or information being violated even after they've died?
Well, you know, if the government's argument here holds and that you don't have an expectation, any expectation of privacy, you know, where does that stop? Does that mean that police can just walk into your house because you don't have an expectation of privacy? Can they just look at your phone? Can they access your social media and your private email? I mean, that is a very dangerous argument because not only is it invasive and disrespectful of the person's life, it also is invasive of all their friends, their relatives, their roommates as well. And so I think that this case raises for the public some very important questions that we need to think about what kind of society we want to be and how do we want to be respectful of privacy and of personal dignity.
Right now, how much of our information can police get access to, or how many of our things, our possessions, can police access once we've died?
Well, that's a good question in terms of once we died. I mean, if you think about it, though, there's so much information out there about us, you know, from your search histories to your medical records to your web browsing. There's your email. There's your location privacy, so your cell phone when it operates tracks your location, and some of that information is collected by phone companies. And so there's all this information out there that just living in the modern digital age generates. And unfortunately, much of this information is not well protected by the law. There's a general rule that the contents of your emails is protected by a warrant requirement. In other words, the government needs to go to a judge and explain that they have a good reason for accessing that information. But a lot of the rest of the information is not protected by a warrant requirement, and sometimes it's not clear whether there's any legal protection for it at all. And I think that's something that needs to change for living people.
And would that include also like your Facebook posts, your social media posts? What about your bank account or your phone calls?
Right. So, you know, Facebook posts and social media posts, you know, if they're public, then the government's going to look at them. But then there's a question about what's required for, you know, if you share with a limited audience. And companies generally require that government agencies need to get a warrant for that. But for other information like your location or that sort of thing, some companies are not requiring a warrant and it's, you know, that information is available. So you can really build a very robust profile of somebody, and not only of that person, but also of their friends and their family. So there's ways to protect this. I mean, we can, for example, Congress has considered but has not passed the Email Privacy Act. That would be something that would make very clear that the contents of your communications require a warrant. That doesn't mean that the police can't get it. It just means that they have to go to a judge and show they have a good reason to get it, you know, in a legitimate investigation. And there are other proposals to protect a lot of the non-content information, like our location privacy and that sort of thing. The ACLU has a case before the Supreme Court this term. It's called U.S. versus Carpenter. And in that case, we are asking the Supreme Court to find that historical cell phone location information, so information about where you were 2 months, 6 months, a year or more ago, is protected by the warrant requirement. And the court will decide that case this term.
So are there other new laws that we might need that would protect people's privacy even after death?
Yeah, I think that this shows that we do need laws to protect people's privacy after death. It should be made clear to everyone that something like this is wrong and should never happen.
There seems to be a kind of a different take or a different philosophy about privacy in Europe compared to in the United States. How does that difference manifest itself in how people's privacy is legally protected in Europe, for example?
Yeah, so big picture, Europe is much more concerned about commercial or consumer privacy than we are. They have sort of general purpose privacy rules that govern how commercial entities can use their data. And one of those rules, the GDPR, is about to go into effect, and it will change the way not only European companies do business, but the way American companies that have European users will do business. And so you're starting to see changes here in privacy policies and that kind of thing. In contrast, here in the United States, we don't have a big overarching privacy law. We have sectoral privacy laws. So we have a law about children's privacy, we have a law about health privacy, we have a law about bank privacy, but we don't have an overarching commercial privacy law. But what we do have is we have more robust laws about government access. We have the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. And we have laws like the Electronic Communications Privacy Act that protects a lot of our electronic data that's generated in emails or social networks or that kind of thing. And in contrast, Europe's laws regarding government access tend to be much weaker than our laws are here. So it's an interesting cultural difference in terms of who you worry about. And I think our experience is, from the founding of the United States is to be very skeptical of government power. And I think in Europe, their experience is to be very skeptical of commercial power.
Going back to the issue of the phone after you've died, and we talked about property rights, and presumably the phone as property would pass on to someone's heirs when they die. What rights do the heirs have to the property, in this case, the phone?
Yeah, I actually don't know the answer to that. I think every state has different laws about inheritance. And so I am not aware of what the laws are in Florida, but it does seem to me that, the law can't be that once somebody passes away, it's just a free-for-all. And anything that they owned, the government can take or search or destroy or whatever. That can't be the rule.
And does the funeral home, who have, I guess, possession of the body, for lack of a better term, do they have any responsibilities or legal rights to deny the police access to the body?
I mean, I would think so. I think they have a moral obligation. But again, you're a private business. You are not obligated to let law enforcement into your business unless they have a warrant.
Those were the only questions that I had thought of. Is there anything else that our listeners should know about the issue of privacy, especially privacy of people after they've died?
I think this case shows that it's a far cry from I have nothing to hide. I think that this case helps show that privacy and security is something that every family needs to care about. And I hope that your listeners will become engaged in this issue, call their representatives and their lawmakers, and support rules that protect and ensure that we have privacy and security in our cell phones, our laptops, and all the data that we generate.
Well, Jennifer Granick, ACLU Surveillance and Cybersecurity Counsel, thank you so much for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.